And joining us on Perspectives today is retired Lieutenant Colonel Dan Hampton. Dan is the author of the book, The Hunter Killers, The Extraordinary Story of the First Wild Weasels, the Band of Maverick Aviators Who Flew the Most Dangerous Missions of the Vietnam War. And Dan flew 151 combat missions during his 20 years in the Air Force for service in the Iraq War, Kosovo conflict, and the First Gulf War. Colonel Hampton received 4 Distinguished Flying Crosses with Valor, a Purple Heart, 8 Air Medals with Valor, 5 Meritorious Service Medals, and numerous other citations. He's a graduate of the United States Air Force Fighter Weapons School. He's a Top Gun school graduate also, and he's a frequent guest analyst on CNN, Fox News, and MSNBC. Dan, thank you very much for being with us, and thank you for your service to our country.
Well, you're quite welcome, Louie, and it's a pleasure.
In 2015 was 50th anniversary at the height of the Vietnam and Cold War. And this book that I just mentioned, The Hunter Killers, at the beginning, it tells us what's happening, what's going on in the cockpit as the pilot is going and trying to avert or look for these surface-to-air missiles, which was a new thing back then. But you also take us into the history of Vietnam and President Eisenhower, President Kennedy, the Bay of Pigs, President Johnson, and on, and then, of course, everything that you all went through. Let's start, first of all, with Vietnam, because a lot of people are thinking, I guess for people like myself, that we hear the stories about World War II and the Korean War, for the younger people, perhaps the Vietnam War is like World War II to us. Would you say that?
Yeah, and I was not a Vietnam vet. I came along after the fact, so I'm like you. I was never taught much about Vietnam. My dad never said anything about it, and you know, the schools didn't teach it. It was almost as if everybody just wanted to forget it, which is impossible if you were involved in it. So I wanted to include as much of the history and background as I could, so people would understand at least why we got into it and why we stayed. And hopefully we could avoid something like that in the future.
When I talked about at the beginning of the interview that you guide us through a little bit of the history, and you're right, we didn't learn much about it in school. And when I was, I guess, in perhaps a elementary school, that my dad would talk something about the Vietnam War and President Johnson was on the news, and I didn't know much anything else except that uncles had gone off to Vietnam and people's older brothers. And you do a great job of explaining the conflict, or at least trying to give us a history of the conflict in your book, The Hunter Killers. And we start off with President Eisenhower, who told incoming President-elect Kennedy to be careful, right?
Absolutely. And the more I learned about it, the more appalled I was that this even happened, because it could have been avoided, it should have been avoided, and there were several times throughout the conflict when it could have been stopped, and it wasn't. And the point of all this is, and I think America collectively has finally realized, that you want to protest the war, that's fine. You want to protest the politicians, that's fine. But the last people in the world that you should go after are the poor guys that have to go fight. And I think America has learned that lesson, and they hopefully now realize that, you know, it's your right, it's your privilege to protest, but not against the military, because they have nothing to do with it. And I wanted the guys that were involved, not only as the weasels, but anybody that saw combat in Vietnam, to get some sort of a tribute and some recognition that they probably didn't get at the time. They certainly didn't get the welcome home that I did.
We're visiting with Dan Hampton. Dan is the author of the book, The Hunter Killers, the story of the first wild weasels, a band of maverick aviators who flew the most dangerous missions of the Vietnam War. As you mentioned protesters a little while ago, in your book you mentioned about one of the first protesters, I guess, the gentleman who set himself on fire.
Yeah, you know, I think for most people of my generation, feeling so strongly about something that you'd kill yourself over it is a foreign concept. And I don't know why somebody would think that would change the outcome of a war. Maybe he was hoping to draw attention. you know, to it. But again, that needs to be focused in the right place, which would be Washington, D.C., not the poor people that are having to go fight the war.
And it happened twice, did it not?
What happened twice?
The people who burned themselves as a protest.
Yeah, there were more than that. And then, you know, everybody, most people are familiar with Kent State and some of the other, yes, you know, big riots. And the, one of the problems was that, you know, the previous big war was World War II, and the whole country was at war. Korea was sort of a gray area, but people still supported it because it only came six years after the first or after the Second World War. And everybody saw communism then the way that we see terrorist threats now. So the same generation that fought World War II basically fought Korea. Vietnam was a whole other generation. And even though the politicians and the military happened to go to war, the people did not. And so you had for the first time a big disconnect here in the United States between, you know, the people we're all doing this for and the people that are actually having to do the fighting, which, you know, was the genesis of some of those protests.
We're visiting with Dan Hampton. Dan is the author of The Hunter Killers. And now, Dan, when you went to war in the Gulf War and in Afghanistan, you went because you were a volunteer. And back then, the draft was on, but certainly a lot of these people who were in there as combat pilots, they were there because they were told they had to, but at the same time, while they were there, they wanted to do their best.
Well, pilots are officers, and officers don't get drafted. And so they were all volunteers anyway. They were among the core professional military folks, whether you're talking Navy, Marine, or Air Force. So there was never a question of pilots, you know, volunteering or not. The weasels were a little bit different because out of all the pilots we had, they had to get these guys now to volunteer for something a little extra special and different and dangerous. And they weren't told what it was, you know, like the Doolittle raid was. You know, they were told it was important, it had to be done, but we can't tell you what it is, and you probably, you know, don't have too good of a chance of coming back. And yet, you know, there were more than enough volunteers to go around. So that says something for the, you know, the fighting spirit of the American military.
One of the things that you mentioned in your book is because, and thank you for correcting me on the draft and the volunteers because...
Oh, that's okay.
But certainly when the government was looking at the fact that the military was going down, and so they started the draft, and there was, I think you mentioned in your book, like in a 40% thing about drug use and AWOLs, a big figure?
Yeah, it was a big figure, and you have to remember that that's not necessarily endemic to the military. Society at the time was going through a lot of that, and the military was more or less representing the population as a whole. I think that Hollywood has done a lot to damage the reputations of Vietnam veterans. I mean, there was certainly a lot of that that went on, but that had gone on in other wars too, not necessarily drugs, but people trying to avoid service and some other things. So it wasn't unique to Vietnam. And, you know, there's a lot of guys, most people that came out of that war, they went on with life and they did just fine. They didn't fall apart. They didn't, you know, become John Rambo or anything like that. And I try to bring that up whenever possible because I think people get kind of a skewed idea of veterans and the effect of war and combat. And, you know, there's no denying that it's a bad situation that nobody wants to go through again. But most people, you know, do what they have to do and then they handle it and they move on with life.
And we're going to talk a little bit more about, get in depth about your book, The Hunter Killers, but I want to kind of set up a little bit more about Vietnam and what was going on. We mentioned earlier President Eisenhower talking to President-elect Kennedy, and a lot of people may not be familiar with, they heard the term, some of the young people today, and even us when I was a kid, about the Bay of Pigs. But Dan, if you wouldn't mind bringing us up to date on that and kind of giving us a brief history of what happened there.
In a nutshell, and remember, you're talking about distilling a very complicated subject, but what it amounted to, and the best parallel today is the fight we have with terrorism. And people in the 40s, 50s, and 60s had the same fears about communism. And so when Cuba was overthrown and the Castros showed up, and Cuba, now all of a sudden there's this communist island 90 miles off the Florida coast, it was seen as a huge threat. So there was a chance with Cuban refugees and immigrants to stage a counter-revolution and take Cuba back. And essentially, that's what the Bay of Pigs operation was supposed to do. And in the end, it wasn't handled correctly, and there was a lack of, I want to say, political will in Washington to follow through with it. So there were, in fact, Cuban forces landed, and there were American naval units off the coast. But in the end, the Washington backed away from it and basically left those people kind of hanging out high and dry. And as you know, the Castros remained in power. What it did as far as Vietnam goes is Kennedy lost a lot of face over that because he was seen as sort of a dilettante, you know, weak and vacillating in the face of communism. And so when the specter of Southeast Asia ruled it, you know, reared its head, he was determined not to appear weak again. So that prompted the escalation into the Southeast Asian conflict. And then, of course, he got assassinated before he could see it through. I personally don't think if he had lived, that we would have gotten involved to the extent that we did in Southeast Asia.
And there is a documentary out there called Virtual Vietnam, where they talk about the fact that had President Kennedy lived, that this war would have been ended a lot sooner.
Well, yeah, I think anybody would have been better than Johnson. He to me, is even worse than some of what we've seen recently. Kennedy was a combat veteran himself, so he knew better than most presidents the realities of that. And, you know, combat is not, it's not Hollywood. It's not something that is really glamorous when you're doing it. And the people that have been through it generally don't ever want to go back, you know. You do it when you have to. And, you know, if there's any other solution, you find it. And I think Kennedy either would have found a solution or he would have gone in and done it right, and the war would have been over in a matter of months instead of lasting, you know, years and years and years.
We're visiting with Dan Hampton. Dan is New York Times bestselling author of Viper Pilot, and this book is called The Hunter Killers. And he's talking a little bit about, well, actually in detail, about the Vietnam War, the conflict, and these men who are out there flying these dangerous missions. Any mission is dangerous, but this was extremely, I guess the SAMs were pretty new to the area, correct, Dan?
Yeah, and you hit it on the head. I mean, any sort of military flying is exceptionally dangerous, and the helicopter guys don't get enough credit for what they do, you know, what they did, and it was all dangerous. This was, in my opinion, more dangerous because whereas most pilots are trying not to get shot at, weasels go out on purpose trying to pick a fight, trying to get shot at, so then they can discover the location of these missiles and guns and then take care of them. So I'm not minimizing anybody's contribution, but that's why it's titled the way it is, for good reason.
And 2015 was the 50th anniversary of, well, Vietnam in 1965. And if you can kind of take us through what happened on that July, Dan?
Yeah, it actually started the previous August, more or less. Well, it started a decade before with the French, but, you know, our involvement started to escalate in August with the Gulf of Tonkin incident. But it was still kind of a halfway effort until 1965. And there were rumors that there were MiG fighters reappearing over North Vietnam, so the U.S. retaliated by sending in our own fighter jets, F-4 Phantoms. And one of these was shot down 50 years ago, the first fighter to ever get shot down by a SAM. And so the Air Force planned a big retaliatory raid, and Lyndon Johnson, being Lyndon Johnson, decided that, you know, the North Vietnamese should be frightened of us, and he was going to warn them that the raid was coming to give them a chance to, you know, surrender or evacuate. And that's exactly what they did. They evacuated and set up a trap. And these poor guys came in, and the raid did not go very well, and so the Pentagon finally realized they were going to have to do something about surface-to-air missiles. And so they created the Wild Weasels out of what happened in July of 1965.
We're visiting with Dan Hampton. Dan is a retired colonel, Air Force colonel, and he is talking about the book that he has just written. He's a New York Times bestselling author. The first book that he wrote, well, it's not the first book he wrote, but this was on the New York Times bestselling list, and that's Viper Pilot. And his latest is The Hunter Killers. And Dan, when we're talking about surface-to-air missiles, people here in the El Paso area are very familiar with, especially Fort Bliss, is for a long time was air defense. And was the Patriot missile something like that? You were involved in that?
Yeah, but the Patriot was one of ours, obviously.
Right,
it's
right.
It's the same idea. It's a missile that is guided from a radar on the ground to either a point in space where it can guide itself, which is what the modern ones do, or back in the 60s, the radar had to maintain a lock on the aircraft all the way through the missile's interception. And this was new technology back then. I mean, it had been around, like I said, long enough to shoot down a couple of U-2s, but it was built to fight bombers, so everybody was shocked and surprised when it ended up shooting down a fighter. Now, the fighter jet didn't have any warning equipment, so it never knew the missile was coming like the jets we have now. And even if it had, he didn't have any jamming pods or self-protection equipment that we all have now. And he didn't, you know, they weren't taught anything about these missiles because they were brand new. So nobody knew how to fight one yet.
We're visiting with Dan Hampton. Dan is the author of the book, The Hunter Killers. Dan, in the book, at the beginning, you take us on a mission and the pilot, unfortunately, is lost. But you also, it leaves us, you know, wondering in the moment about, you know, what happens to some of these other men, like the men who eject and became prisoners of war. And, of course, that's very topical now with what Donald Trump said about Senator McCain and prisoners of war. So take us again through this first mission that you're talking about where this young man is supposed to go home, but instead he flies this mission and never makes it.
That's true. He's giving what's called a checkout ride to a brand new pilot in the country who's just come in, and so it's like an orientation flight. You know, take him up, show him where to air refuel, the geography, show him North Vietnam, that sort of thing. And unfortunately, he gets hit by a surface-to-air missile while this happens, and he was in fact due to go home that very evening. And he never made it out. The other guy did and spent 7+ years as a POW. But that, you know, I don't mean to, again, minimize it or sound callous, but having done it myself, I'll just tell you that that's part of what we all understand is a risk, you know, in that sort of profession. This can happen, and unfortunately for him, it did.
We're visiting with Dan Hampton. Dan is a New York Times bestselling author of the book Viper Pilot. The recent one is The Hunter Killers. And the Wild Weasels, some may say, I guess, that perhaps out of desperation or the fact that they were stunned, the government launched this program. So to counter the surface-to-air missile or SAM problem, guide us through what you take us through in the book as far as the Wild Weasels, their first mission.
Well, what happened is after that July incident, they had to get the volunteers to come in, and they had to figure out how to adapt the equipment that they had to these airplanes. And so they did all that in lightning speed for the military, because by Thanksgiving of 1965, these guys were all over there in place fighting SAMs. They suffered a 25% casualty rate within the first couple weeks, which anybody in the military will tell you is a horrible rate. But they also proved that the concept worked, because they were able to locate electronically an enemy radar and then go in and do what fighter pilots do and attack it and kill it. And so the program only grew from there. And as, you know, the next year and years went on, there were more and more Wild Weasels in place. And a good way to prove their effectiveness is to, and this is in the book too, it's in a chart in the back, but it took about 8 missiles to shoot down an airplane in 1965. After the Weasels got into the war, the number steadily increased to almost 30 towards 1970, 1972. So they were definitely doing what they were supposed to do.
And as you mentioned, they were so effective that even after the war, they remained in place.
Oh, yeah. I was one myself. So for 20 years, you know, in between Vietnam and the Gulf War, the F-4 Phantom took over the role. And then in 1991, when we went back to war in the Gulf, I was actually in a mixed squadron. It was F-4s and F-16s doing specifically hunter-killer operations. And then the F-4 was retired, and the F-16 has remained ever since as the Air Force's Wild Weasel, and remains so today.
We're visiting with retired Lieutenant Colonel Dan Hampton. Dan is the author of the book, the New York Times bestselling book, Viper Pilot, and The Hunter Killers is the latest book, talking about the wild weasels and what they did in Vietnam. Now, Dan, take us again through, I can't remember what, I think it was right at the beginning, when the pilot is flying and he can sense that something is wrong and they're running out of fuel and they have to go back. You write it very well.
I think you're talking about one of Leo Thorsness's.
Yes.
Yeah, that was a couple of years later. That was in 1967. And by that time, the weasels had moved out of the F-100, which was a smaller, older fighter, into the F-105. Which is a big, manly, burly, fast-moving airplane with lots of room for more equipment and a much bigger weapons payload. So Leo and Harry Johnson were flying, and I think what I wrote about was a mission where one of their weasels was shot down. And so Leo had to stick around and do what we called CSAR, which is combat search and rescue, and he was trying to get helicopters in to pick up the two guys on the ground. Then the MiG showed up, and he ran out of gas, and so he had to come back out of Vietnam into Thailand to air refuel. And then by the time he could do that, he was the only one left, and so he had to go back in all alone and try to do what he could to help these guys. It was just a long, ugly day, but actually fairly typical of a weasel combat mission, which is, you know, most pilots do, you know, one or two things, and they're done. Weasels are always, you know, in the middle of what's going on, so they could be doing weaseling, they could be attacking things on the ground or fighting MiGs or whatever. And he sort of did it all that day, which was a very good way to depict the success of the weasel mission.
We're visiting with retired Lieutenant Colonel Dan Hampton. Dan has just written a book called The Hunter Killers about the wild weasels during the Vietnam War. Now, during this book, you also let the reader know that you have gone in and carefully documented everything to get their stories right, and even the ones of the pilots that we lost, that you wanted to make sure that their story was told correctly. How difficult was it to collect all this information? Because I assume that as an officer, of course, you knew a lot of the things that were going on, and perhaps because you flew different missions yourself, but bringing it and laying it into layman's terms, but telling the story correct, you did a very good job about doing that.
Well, I always like to hear that. Thanks. I'd gotten some good practice with the previous book. It was called Lords of the Sky, and it was a 100-year history of fighter pilots. So I had to be able to translate very technical, often boring information into something that people would be interested in. So I used kind of the same technique with this book, and I was fortunate enough to be able to talk to these guys. The ones in Lords of the Sky, you know, they've all passed on, but the Vietnam-era guys are still around, and they were willing to speak to me. And so every chapter I wrote, I would send to a panel of them, basically, and they would go through and they would correct it. Because even though I'd been a fighter pilot and a weasel, I was a generation after them, and I'd never flown an F-100 or an F-105. So, you know, they were able to really help me get all the details right, and I'm eternally indebted to them for that, because I wanted their story told right, you know, and there's a lot of misinformation out there, so I was very grateful to get their help.
As you mentioned, Hollywood, of course, sometimes glamorizes things, and they make it a lot more different than it really is. You know, of course, we remember Tom Cruise in Top Gun, and perhaps Mel Gibson, I guess, did a pretty good job of portraying Colonel Moore in that. That was probably one of the better Vietnam movies, because a lot of the other ones were, as you mentioned, either glamorizing or criticizing or putting the blame on the U.S. soldier.
And, you know, I'll really hand it to some of the last movies that came out, like The Pacific and Band of Brothers and then Saving Private Ryan. They got the details right, even down to the way that it sounds, you know, when a bullet goes past your head and some other things. They can never get the smell down right, which they'll probably never be able to do. But Hollywood has indeed done it badly in some respects. They've done it very well, though, too. And in their own defense, you know, it's very hard to film something like that and get it correct, especially where aviation is concerned. You know, everybody rips on Top Gun, It was a good public relations movie, and the music's great, and, you know, it did a lot for the military. But if they tried to film it the way that air combat really is, with the technology they had in the 80s to do it with, you never would have seen anything. I think they could do it now with computer animation mm-hmm. and some other things that they have. But they did the best they could. And again, I tend to think that anything that raises people's awareness about any of these events is a good thing.
Dan, if you don't mind, as we're wrapping this up, if you can give us perhaps a web page or something that our listener can go to find out more about your other books and also this book.
Well, there's a website that I've got, and also HarperCollins has put together a Facebook page for me. You can get a hold of me through either one of those. I do respond to people. It may take me a while because I get a lot of emails, but if people go to the trouble to write, I figure I should write back. And the Facebook page has some of the CNN and MSNBC clips and some other things that I've done, and they talk about the other books as well. You can get the books at Amazon, Costco, Barnes & Noble, any of the places, you know, books are sold.
And thank you again very much, Dan, not only for being with us, but for your service to our country. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Lou. I appreciate you having me, and I'll come back anytime you like.
We've been visiting with retired Colonel Dan Hampton, the author of the book, The Hunter Killers, The Story of the Wild Weasels During the Vietnam War.